up? Welcome in, everybody. It is that time of week, the Sooners on SI podcast, and we're no longer in a holding pattern, sort of. We were in a holding pattern. Now we're in a different holding pattern. We'll tell you what that's all about under the realm of DC umbrella. Don't open it inside, even though it's a rainy day here in the metro area. I'm Ryan Chapman, coming to you always from Moore. We got the big boss man, John Hoover, 918 Hoove, back up there. Is it dry up there? Because we are getting, I guess it's not really getting dumped on, but it's been a steady sprinkle all day.
Yeah, we've had mist here. The ground is wet. But let's face it, Ryan, OU football right now, it's always in a holding pattern.
We're waiting on, if it's not one thing, it's another.
Yep.
It's just good fun. Someone braving the elements with me down in Norman, the great Carson Field. My friend, have you stayed healthy this week? Have we avoided incident, at least inside the apartment?
Sharp objects and all that.
No injuries, no sickness, doing well. Wish it was a little bit sunnier out, like you said, but doing well. My dog, I know that she is not too happy about this rainy weather, but besides that, doing great.
Avoided the big lockdown in Norman yesterday, so that was good. And the good news is for the pup, for any golfers out there, this weekend should be electric, should be lights out. No football really this weekend as we're going to the Pro Bowl, which is not a bowl, or I guess it technically has pros, but it's more of a replacement fiesta, but we'll get into all that when we get to it, if we get to it. Let's start here, gentlemen. We have news, finally. We've been waiting. The 24, 48 hours after the national championship, Jim Knowles, would he or won't he? Well, he is. He is leaving Columbus. He's not leaving the Big Ten, and he's not coming to Oklahoma. He is going to land at Penn State. Penn State's going to throw three stacks at him. If you saw his little intro video as he's addressing the team, State College, Philly guy, getting to go close to home, all that stuff. So, John, Oklahoma was waiting. It was kind of throwing a Hail Mary, see if they could grab the big fish. And while there was interest and all that stuff, in the end, it kind of is back to where we started, which is, are they going to find an outside name that may not be like a Jim Knowles? Are they going to promote from within? But overall, we're not going to have to pick through what's Jim Knowles' defense and what Brent Venables' defense is, because it's going to be BV's defense getting it going in Norman.
Yeah, I hate to be the guy that pats myself on the back, but I told y'all 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that Jim Knowles to Oklahoma. Remember that? It's not happening. This is not happening. You're not leaving Ohio State, where you're playing for a national championship, and just in this case, just won a national championship, to go to Oklahoma, where the coach is on the hot seat after going 6-7 for the second time in 3 years. That's just not happening. So here we are, 2 weeks later, 2-3 weeks later, and it didn't happen. So not everybody had that opinion in terms of, you know, not a prediction, but what makes common sense. And this was a common sense situation. You can't expect Jim Knowles to seriously say, you know, I could be the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma. Then that's where my fiance lives. And I, you know, that whole thing was just like, what? When we're talking the highest levels of college football here, the highest levels, people aren't making it would be unprecedented to have someone like Jim Knowles make that decision. The decision that he made was to go to Penn State. He said in that little video you referenced, I wasn't good enough to play at Penn State, but I coach, and here I am now coaching at Penn State. So that's been something that's probably on his bucket list, be a defensive coordinator or head coach someday at Penn State. Here he is. He's the DC. And like you said, $3.1 million a year is what his current term is. He's going to get raises and all that stuff every year. I don't think Oklahoma was going for $3.1 million. I saw fans say, listen, if we're going to go for Jim Knowles, let's throw four at him or three and a half. Sure, that would have been great. I don't think Oklahoma got much more than two and a half. So here's what I do know is that Knowles' agent reached out to OU, initiated the contact, initiated the talks. Knowles apparently, by all reporting coming out of Columbus, wanted out of Ohio State. I don't know if that's a Knowles thing, right? And that coaches he was working with didn't really get along with him, or if that's a Ryan Day thing where he's just a hard guy to get along with, but he was never comfortable there. I also know that Knowles talked with Venables. Okay. They discussed the job, but I know that Knowles owed it to himself to see what Brent Venables had to say, but he never seriously wanted to come to Oklahoma, as I said, 6-7. If OU was in the playoff every year, or OU was going 12-2 every year, then I could see Jim Knowles absolutely would give a hard, long, hard look to Oklahoma. But 6-7, 2 out of the last 3 years, if they don't pick it up in their second year in the SEC, he's probably, Brent Venables is probably going to be fired. Why would you come into that situation if you're Jim Knowles? So it just didn't make sense. Plus the whole thing about the SEC, you know, you're more familiar with what the Big Ten does, how they play and all that. You'd be jumping into the SEC where you're not as familiar. So it just never made sense. Basically, bottom line is he used Oklahoma for leverage to get the Penn State job after Tom Allen went to Clemson. And he used the Oklahoma job, the Oklahoma opening, to get leverage for a massive raise, $3.1 million.
He pulled the Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff did this at Arizona when Lincoln Riley left for USC. Congratulations to Cliff on his contract. It's the weird spot of if this opening had happened last year, like this time last year, Oklahoma would have been in a much better bargaining position coming off a 10-3 year. If Ben Arbuckle works out and things go well this year, they would have been in a much better position next year. It's just the stars did not seem to align. But Carson, you look at it, I believe, I think it was Sooner Scoop that first reported. Don't know who was first, but I know that Sooner Scoop reported that Arkansas State defensive coordinator Nate Dreiling, that's a guy that could also be linked, as well as some internal candidates. It feels like, though, needs to get done here. You wait on Jim Knowles. You waited to take your swing there, but it's like, I don't know. Until spring practice happens, you're actually like organizing practice, getting on the field, maybe having a defensive coordinator is not the biggest concern, because Brent Venables is going to, you're not installing new stuff, and Brent Venables is going to be your recruiting, but you also need to get this thing done so you can finalize the staff and get everything rolling forward once they exit winter workouts here, Carson.
No, totally. Just kind of building off of Hoove's point, I totally agree. I mean, the selling point for Penn State is so much higher than the selling point for OU at this very moment. I mean, Penn State playoff team, great season. OU 6-7, first SEC year. There's still a lot to be proven for this OU squad in the new conference. Their first year did not go well. Obviously, that could change very quickly, but it's a little bit harder to compete with Penn State, especially when you look at Knowles. He's from the Philly area. You're going to choose your home state over Oklahoma 10 times out of 10. So I totally get why he did it. 3.1, that's a heck of a deal. I believe the highest paid defensive coordinator ever, which is ridiculous. But as far as what they look for now, I don't think it would be bad to go after someone like an Arkansas State defensive coordinator, someone from a smaller school that's proven, put together some really good defenses, or they can hire internally. That is the one thing we've talked about this too before. Brent Venables knows his defense. He is very proven on that side of the ball, did amazing things in his very long tenure at Clemson. So I think one way or another, they're going to get somebody that does a good job. But I'm with you on the fact they need to make this decision very quickly. It's getting close to spring football season. They want to have things in place for, I mean, the spring transfer portal window, the second signing day coming up in just, I guess, almost a week now. So there's a lot of things that I feel like they just have to get someone in place, even if that's just a figurehead and Brent has a more hands-on role with the defense. Just getting that decision made would be huge.
Yeah, Ryan, I'm talking about some of the paths. Oh, go ahead, Hoop.
Real quick, Wes Goodwin is apparently still in play. You know, after being fired as a defensive coordinator at Clemson, he's still in play for possible linebacker coach at OU, also for possible defensive analyst at OU. So if that happens, listen, I told you guys where I want this thing to go. Brian Odom. I still want Brian Odom. I said Brian Odom 2 weeks ago. I still want Brian Odom. I don't know if Brent would make that move, or I don't know. He needs a linebackers coach. He needs somebody to help him call defensive signals on game day. Brian's done that. And guys, one of those dudes that's loyal to the program, but that's not necessarily a great thing to hang on the wall. If we're being honest and evaluating offensive staff. So six in one hand, half a dozen in the other, I guess.
I want no more Oklahoma ties. Quit it. I'm done with it. Stop it. Make it end. It's one of those things where obviously any connection way back into Bob Stoops, legendary coach, Hall of Fame coach, That was a different time. You cut the ties, move forward. The program needs a little bit of a splash, a little bit of a refresh. So what you're seeing going that direction on the offensive side of the ball, right? Ben Arbuckle, no real Oklahoma ties outside of a first date that obviously went well on the date side of things, not so well on the results side of things. Hopefully the marriage can flip around the results for Oklahoma, all that fun stuff. And I've said this before, and like, this is not an Oklahoma thing. This is not a Brent Venables thing. Taking a step back, like, I have no issue with Brent Venables calling the plays himself on Saturdays. I don't know why we have a double standard in college football of go through your laundry list of offensive-minded head coaches that don't give up play calling duties and rock and roll, and it's a good thing. And the second you have a defensive head coach who's doing play calling duties, and suddenly this is like the worst thing in the world. I'm like, there are things that get, there are strengths, there are weaknesses, there are things that get mixed, missed, all that stuff. But I have no issue if it ends up being whoever, whatever name you want to bring in, Coach X, that just does everything Monday through Friday, that helps Brent Venables be the CEO and the head coach, and then Brent Venables steps in, and if he is just outright calling the plays on Saturdays, that does not bother me one bit. I almost think it's most important to find somebody like a Matt Wells, who a couple of years ago stood right next to Brent Venables and had a big hand in a lot of the game management stuff. The improvements we saw from year one to year two, as far as managing things, as long as you've got that, and as long as Brent Venables has someone he trusts to say, I saw this on this drive, I'm going to get on the headset and I'm going to tell, whether it's a new hire, whether it's Wes Godwin, whether it's or Goodwin, whether it's Brandon Hall, I need X, Y, and Z. These are the three adjustments I need in the next 2 minutes. You guys go coach that over there to the players. Once they come back out, we'll get that done, to where Brent Venables can manage the clock and all that stuff. I don't think that that's all an issue. So we'll see how that plays out. That's the big thing that's happening. There's a couple of other notes in news filtering in the background. Let's start in the future, and then we'll work our way back to the weekend, if that makes sense. Looking forward, Board of Regents linking up here over the next couple of days. Three big, just kind of bullet points that pertain to football and athletics on the agenda. Bullet point number one, confirming in Ben Arbuckle's contract and all those terms and all that fun stuff. That is more of a rubber stamp role. If they've agreed to the contract, Board of Regents needs to go green light, we approve. Yay. Thing number two is a bulleted list of basically Governor Stitt, we had talked about it, signed the Oklahoma executive order that allows universities and collectives in this interim period between the House settlement coming in, all that stuff, to work together. So bullet point number two is the Board of Regents authorizing whatever they need to send over to One Oklahoma and back on the NIL front. And then the third thing was a contract for construction companies, that leveling two or three construction companies for some of those West Side renovations. That does not mean that the West Side renovations are coming effective game one, 2025, anything like that. It's just the next step. There's just some renovations, press box suites, west side of the stadium. Those are the three things kind of rolling with the Board of Regents. We've all tossed this bad boy to you, as someone who has done years and years and years covering the legalese of Board of Regents and all that stuff. Anything that stuck out, or is this just business as usual while we roll through the offseason?
Yeah, don't hold your breath on the West Side improvements. They've been, they're naming construction companies, and they still to this. I mean, they've got a general plan, they've got a master plan, but they don't have blueprints. They don't have, what the new press box is going to look like, what the new amenities are going to be exactly. So that's a few years down the road still. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Yeah, the Stitt stuff is interesting. His executive order, and how the Board of Regents is going to respond to that in terms of empowering One Oklahoma or the collective. There's a collective of collectives. I don't know if you guys knew that, national collective something or other. I can't remember what it's called, but it's I don't think One Oklahoma is participating in that. Maybe they get in on it. I don't know. Everybody's still looking for direction in this era of NIL. And when the governor of the state of Oklahoma comes out and says, here's how we're going to do things, and the president at OU and OSU come out and say, we support what he's doing. This is big for us. We're going to need your help. And collectives are good. Two thumbs up for collectives is the way they want this thing to work. But it can't stand in the way. It can't be a hindrance to getting your prospects and your student athletes their NIL money. It has to come together, work in conjunction, coalesce. And Stitt's deal last week was a big step in that direction.
Here's the official legalese on the action proposed. President Harris recommends that the Board of Regents authorize university administration to negotiate and enter into such contracts and agreements with, upon approval of the university's vice president and general counsel, and disperse funds to A, collectives or similar entities that support the university's student athletes, and or B, the university's current or prospective student athletes directly or indirectly as deemed necessary or appropriate to support those student athletes for their NIL rights. So there you have it. It seems to be like just the next step. And like we said, the NCAA doesn't enforce anything right now. So this was just giving Oklahoma the legal backing from the governor's and standpoint and the government standpoint to greenlight that, move forward. So I don't know like what the tangible come Friday, this is what it looks like, but it will help Oklahoma behind the scenes, and certainly stuff that will help them be more fluid and able to pounce on stuff, which will be good for the Sooners. That was looking to the future, guys. Going into the past, Sooners did host a junior day this past weekend. High school recruiting still a thing. I know we're portal, portal, portal. The first big name of that, the first effect of that came out yesterday. Yeah, Tuesday. The days all run together. Oklahoma lands four-star wide receiver Daniel Odom from St. John Bosco, 6'2", 175. Carson, let's start with Daniel Odom, then kind of work our way back to just junior day at large. Pretty successful, and now as you look into the 2026 class, it's not necessarily four Ben Arbuckle commits, but three guys who have opted to stay aboard as Ben Arbuckle's come in, and now Daniel Odom's made his pledge to the Sooners.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at Daniel Odom's profile, great player, great size. He is very highly touted by all of the recruiting metrics, all of that stuff. And he is also familiar with Jaden O'Neal, OU's quarterback commit in the 2026 class. Apparently, Parker Thune from OU Insider reported this, that apparently their childhood friends played since youth ball. So that's big. They have that connection. It sounds like that kind of reaffirms Jaden O'Neal's commitment too. I know a lot of people have been saying, oh, Texas A&M, a lot of schools like that are trying to work in their little screws, just try to get some attention to him. But that makes it sound like it's more probable that he will end up in Norman. So that's good too. Both of those guys were at senior day this past weekend, plus so many big targets for them, some in Oklahoma too. Caden Jones, a running back from Jenks. He is a four-star as well, one of the best players in the state. That would be a huge get. Mason James, he is a receiver from Norman, actually. So this is his backyard pretty much. He went to that too. He took a picture with Caden Jones and Jaden O'Neal. They posted that on Twitter. So there were so many big players. I think it's really fascinating that there are so many good players from Oklahoma in this class, still have a lot of interest in the Sooners, even after not such a great season this past year.
Yeah, it's our first opportunity to kind of get to see Ben Arbuckle get after it. We heard Carson, you and I talked to a bunch of the players kind of in those days in Norman leading up to the Armed Forces Bowl, and he's a guy that the energy and his ability to kind of connect with people and the relaxed kind of energy that he brought. I know that everyone that we talked to really, really enjoyed talking about that. And so you'd imagine that will translate to recruiting pretty well. And as always, with the Emmett Jones, Joe John DeMarco, Bill Beanbo, pretty familiar with that. Another junior day coming up as well. So another opportunity to get going for Oklahoma's staff, John, as they, it's just weird. They've been all over the place. We get so honed in on. You got to retain guys, then it becomes NIL, then it becomes portal, then it comes this and that. I almost forget that there are high school athletes out there that need to be recruited, and this staff is getting after it.
Yeah, they are. In terms of Odom and O'Neal, Jaden O'Neal posted on Twitter as well. Said something like, "Hey fam, let's get to work. We've been going at it since youth league." And this was after Odom's commitment. He's at St. John Bosco in California. They grew up in Cali together. So, a Cali quarterback throwing to a Cali wide receiver could be something that looks really good on paper for OU fans. But there's a third element to this, and that is that OU went out and got a commitment. Or, I'm sorry, made didn't get a commitment. Sorry, misspoke. Tongue-tied on recruiting. Made a scholarship offer to another quarterback in this class, Bo Bentley. Out of Salina, Texas, has got an offer. He's got a lot of good offers. but he's got an offer from Oklahoma. And my first thought, everybody's first thought is, oh crap, what does this do with O'Neal? You're going to offer two quarterbacks? Well, it's 2024, it's 2025, right? If I could flip the calendar. And in 2025, if you're a program like Oklahoma, especially one that's got a new offensive coordinator, you're trying to get a new system going, a new culture going on offense. Yeah, you're going to offer two quarterbacks. They offered two quarterbacks last year, you'll remember. So, in Zerbrugg and Michael Hawkins, right? So you got two quarterbacks last year. You're bringing in two quarterbacks in the 2026 class is what they're trying to do. I was impressed with this kid, with Bo Bentley. What is he? 6'2", around 200 some pounds. He's not a, he's not a big, huge dude. He's not a 4'4" guy, but he threw for 3,200 yards and rushed for almost 1,000 yards, 70% completions, total of like 63 touchdowns last year. His team goes 16-0 and wins the 4A state title, 4A1, I think, state title. He's big time. And the fact that he's got an offer now alongside Jaden O'Neal shows that he's a good prospect. So yeah, looking forward to seeing more tape on both of these guys and seeing how they kind of stack up.
Yeah, it's reminiscent a little bit of, yeah, you mentioned the Hawkins and Zerberg class. It also reminds me, not high school recruiting, but when Brent Venables arrived and Oklahoma's quarterback room was really, really short on numbers. It wasn't just Davis Bevel, but also bringing General Pootie in through the portal along with Dylan Gabriel. That's what it reminded me a bit of, because it was one of those things that you looked at it and went, okay, obviously having to bring in a quarterback or two from the portal. You said the pickup for Western Carolina, all that, just to get the numbers right in the quarterback room. And that's something that Brent Venables has talked about a couple of times through spring, is how hard it is to maintain numbers in the quarterback room. I almost think that we're moving toward a moment of rethinking two quarterback offers. Doesn't necessarily mean you think one guy's out the door, and more just like, well, we're gonna lose somebody to the portal, so might as well bring in a couple of guys and at least mold them in how you practice, and Ben Arbuckle, how he likes to coach his quarterbacks, just start that process from the jump instead of having to get guys acclimated. So we will see how all of that pans out as we kind of get back into recruiting mode here over the next couple of weeks. This big junior day comes right before a dead period, so probably the last little bit of recruiting news upcoming this weekend before, at least on the on-campus front, a little bit of a dead period. We get our calendars back rolling as we head deeper into the spring and into the summer. The next big recruiting will actually be portal recruiting post spring portal, but we will kick that down the curb and get to that when we get to it, because we still have to have spring practice everywhere before we do that.
March 6th.
Elsewhere, oh, go ahead.
March 6th is the start date for spring practice. So we're like almost a month away from, or just over a month away from start of
Yeah,
spring practice.
a month and change. The 6th is what, next Thursday of February. So we are what, 8 days plus a month? Yikes. That stuff, I get stressed when I hear that, like, pretty soon we're gonna have the end of men's and women's basketball, gymnastics, softball and baseball are getting going. Softball getting going next week, baseball a couple weeks from now. And then all of a sudden, before you know it goes from not much happening to, oh my gosh, it's a headache all the time, which is fun, but also stressful. Elsewhere, guys, on the football front, take a step out of Norman, head down to Mobile, if you'll allow me. Senior Bowl getting going, as well as the Shrine Bowl. I guess the news out of the Shrine Bowl is kind of unfortunate. Ethan Downs, Nate Downs, popped this out there on social media. Ethan's got the flu, so it's going to impact some of the practices and certainly the actual Shrine Bowl game. But with both the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl, for guys like Oklahoma players, they have film against the SEC. They have film against other Big 12 teams. So yes, turning heads in one-on-one drills is big time, but the biggest boon is being able to talk to the coaches, talk to the scouts kind of behind the scenes. So Ethan will still be able to take advantage of that, you hope. On the field, though, Billy Bowman made his impact day one down there yesterday. He was excellent in one-on-one drills. If you were following the Senior Bowl content, there were plenty of clips of him, whether it be pass breakups, interception, all that fun stuff is, they get rolling down on what do they call it? The road to the NFL draft, the first stop to the NFL draft down there at the Senior Bowl. And we've seen this be a big spot for a couple of players. You remember who just a couple of years ago, Perrin Winfrey had made some noise down there at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, OU players seem to always perform well at these things. The road the NFL draft starts in Mobile is their tagline. And I was not surprised at all to see it was a guy like Billy Bowman, who's got a ton of experience, come in for what would be the draft of his rookie year, right? I mean, he's transitioning from college to the NFL. Remember when he was a freshman and he was doing things in practice, first spring and in first 2 days in practice, first training camp, and you'd talk to guys, you'd talk to the upperclassmen or whoever, and they're like, "Yeah, watch this freshman, Billy Bowman. Billy Bowman's doing real big. He's really smart. He knows what he's doing. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He understands football. He's got a high football IQ." Guess what? Same exact thing. Same exact thing is going on in Mobile right now. So he's impressing the NFL scouts just like he impressed the folks when he got to Norman.
Yeah, the big thing I was cautioned to is like, hey, one good week does not erase whatever you put on film throughout your whole career. But Carson, the good news for those guys down there at the Senior Bowl, especially Billy Bowman, a good day on day one, and we'll see what happens here as the week unfolds, is only going to serve to support what we saw this year, last year, throughout his career. It's only pairing pre-existing, what you assumed of him versus what you're going to get with Billy. I think that this is the kind of situation he thrives in.
Yeah, I mean, I only got a 2-game sample size of Billy Bowman this year because obviously he sat out the bowl game. But we talked a lot about how this pass defense really, if there was a weak spot of the defense, that was it. They really struggled with Nussmeier. I felt like Billy Bowman, even in that LSU game where the pass defense really struggled, he was exceptional, played some really good defense against obviously a very talented LSU wide receiver room, just a really good athlete. I think he's going to be a great player in the NFL. A clip I saw yesterday was him intercepting Jalen Milroe. Probably a little bit of PTSD for Milroe. Not necessarily Bowman in that game, but other Sooners. Probably not a huge fan of the Crimson and Cream at this point. But Bowman, that's great that he's been doing well. I think he really could translate to the next level. And Downs, it is a bummer. When you have the flu, you're not going to want to hit people. That's just one of those things that it takes all of the energy you have out of you. But like you said, it's so much about building those relationships, building that rapport with coaches, and I think he'll be able to do that just fine, even feeling a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what some of the draft buzz is about Bowman too, because one thing we saw in the NFL this year, it's kind of like a 2 or 3 year trend moving back toward, oh, we value running backs again. Well, you know what Billy Bowman's been really, really good at, especially these past 2 years as the light bulbs turned on, run support. So I'm interested to see what teams kind of start to show their interest. And he's going to have a lot of not run support, but you think about that fourth down stop with Luther Burden down in Columbia, stuff like that. I think that that's things that, you're going to circle and it's going to pop out to scouts, GMs, all that fun stuff alike. So we'll
Yeah.
see there. Also, shout out to Luke Alzinga, who looked great holding out there at the Shrine Bowl.
That's right. Offensive coordinators in the NFL saw that play and they said, "Okay, we're going to take the jet sweep out when he's the on the other side of the field."
Yeah. Well,
That was painful to watch. That was
I think
the hit of the
with
year for sure.
he almost knocked Luther Burden out of the game
I
with
know.
that. Like, not only did he blow up the play, but Luther Burden was a little hobbled there for a little bit. Unfortunately, it did not knock Luther Burden out of the game. Maybe that would have changed how the fourth quarter went, but I digress. I digress. We're in this weird idle period here leading up to the Super Bowl, as next week everyone will get to New Orleans and we'll get the big media days with all the TikTok content, which is always a little bit of a headache, but it is what it is. But per usual, we're used to this, and Oklahoma and the Kansas City, that connection helps, but there's what, seven Sooners on the active roster headed to New Orleans. You've got who'd you love to help me out if I missed any? Obviously, Jalen Hurts and Lane Johnson in Philly. Then you got Creed, Samaje, Winchester, Hollywood. Am I missing? Who am I missing?
Wanya Morris.
Wandae Morris. There we go.
Yeah.
Also there on Kansas City, and then even if you want to like take a step back another layer, Grant Calcaterra, who played at Oklahoma, also on that Philly roster. So there'll be plenty of Oklahoma flavor in this Super Bowl, as there has been the last couple of years, in large part due to the Chiefs.
If the Chiefs win, McCabe Metoyer is also going to get a Super Bowl ring. He's been on the injured reserve list or reserve injured list all season for them. Yeah, the Oklahoma Chiefs, keeping it real, third year in a row that Oklahoma has had the most players in the championship game weekend. Third year in a row they've had the most players in the Super Bowl. So it's all due to Kansas City. And you can say, oh, well, it's all one team. Well, two things about that. Number one, Kansas City loves OU players, right? Especially the offensive linemen, Bill Beedenbaugh. They've made a habit of it. Number two, one of the reasons they're succeeding is because they love OU players, guys like Creed Humphrey and Samaje Perine comes out of nowhere. One play the other night, guys, one play, basically the next to last play of the game, he comes in third and nine, lines up on the right side, hasn't played all game, lines up on the right side, trickles out behind the offensive line, runs a little corner route, wide open. Mahomes hits him. The series before that, that allowed them to clinch the game, right? Take a knee, run the clock out. But the series before that, when the Chiefs took the lead with the field goal, it was Jordan Phillips, who former Sooner Jordan Phillips, who sat, I would say he sacked Mahomes, but he actually sacked his blocker, threw him into Mahomes, and took them both down. You got Sooners making plays all over the field, man. Look at Kyle Kotera didn't make any catches, but Jalen Hurts scored three touchdowns on the ground and one passing. Hollywood Brown caught three passes in that game. Winchester was down there doing what he always does, making perfect snaps and chasing dudes on punt returns and stuff. So yeah, it's oh, another one. My favorite one of the weekend was Tressway, Washington, in the championship game, NFC Championship, throws a 23-yard pass to the backup tight end. It's fantastic. Perfect pass, one of one, fake punt, kept the drive alive, scored a field goal on the drive, but they ended up getting beat, whatever it was, 50 million to 10 or whatever that score was. It was bad. But yeah, I mean, the Sooners are making plays in the championship games all over the field. It was cool to watch.
It brought a tear to Doug Deacon and Luke Elzinga's eyes as they saw that. It was like the legacy. Unfortunately for Tressway, Jalen Hurts played maybe his best game since the last Super Bowl appearance. Otherwise, it would have been another day of is the OU punter going to have the best passer rating on the field of all OU quarterbacks?
Yep.
Jalen Hurts made sure to poo-poo that. Between Jalen Hurts, Samaje, Hollywood, what, 5.5, 4.5? Would you put it total OU touchdowns in the Super Bowl? It's got to be up there when you factor in
Yeah, it's
passing
really
and rushing
Hollywood.
touchdowns from Hurts plus Hollywood, Samaje. It'll be pretty active. Our good friend, shout out Patrick Dunn. He's gonna have a busy Super Bowl Sunday behind the keyboard for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'd say 3.5. 3.5 is my over under on touchdowns, OU touchdowns.
So
And if Cal Kotera scores one, that counts.
Well, Alabama's going to get credit for all the hurts, as well as Oklahoma and SMU. And they can share the glory. Everyone will chop it up,
Yep.
indeed.
And
Otherwise, they're in for workouts. Oh, go ahead.
that's not all the NFL news of the week. Everybody's favorite former Sooner, Baker Mayfield, made it to the Pro Bowl again. Jaden Daniels from Washington opted out. He's not injured. He just opted out. He's had a bit of a surprisingly heavy workload this year and took a little bit of a beating. And so he just basically said, I need the week off. He's starting his rehab and off-season rehab and all that stuff a week early. So he's going to not participate in the Pro Bowl games, which opened a roster spot for Baker Mayfield to make his second straight Pro Bowl game. Baker, you'll remember, was the MVP of last year's Pro Bowl game. I use air quotes, game. And he also won the precision passing challenge in the skills showdown. So Baker just had a has had an unbelievable run since he signed with the Bucks. Career highs, 71.4% this year, completion percentage, 4,500 yards exactly, 41 touchdowns. His passer rating, he'd never been over 96 before. He was 107 this year, 106.8. So hell of a year for Baker. There's now seven Sooners in the Pro Bowl total this year. Creed Humphrey, not playing, but he gets the recognition. Lane Johnson, not playing, but he gets the recognition. And then Marvin Mims, Joe Mixon, CeeDee Lamb, and Nick Bonitto, and Baker Mayfield. So a heck of a run for OU football in the NFL.
I will not remember what happened last year. I also won't remember what happens this weekend, unless Baker has some great highlights in the dodgeball, because it is a joke. But Pro Bowl, we love the honor. I don't give a rip about what happens. Where do they go to Orlando? Where do they go for that now? They
It's
had a great
Orlando. It's Orlando
year.
now. I
It's
can remember
Orlando.
Adrian Peterson's, I think his rookie year, he was the MVP. And it's because he thought it was a real game.
Yeah.
And so he was punishing anybody who tried to tackle him, he ended up running for like 150 yards or something.
And they'll like pull him out to be like,
Andrew's like, "This is football, isn't it?" And everybody's like, "Dude, calm down. This is the Pro Bowl. Stop hitting us."
we are here to be on a beach in Hawaii. That's what we're here for. So that'll be this weekend. I will not. We will keep tabs on all the Pro Bowl happening. So any Pro Bowl game stories that come to OklahomaCityOnSI.com will be pinned by John Hoover, obviously. Finishing out the football block of things back in Norman, they are in winter workouts still, all that fun stuff. That doesn't mean that we sit idle, though. If you go to that same website, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com, you can read our transfer talk series breaking down all of Oklahoma's new incoming transfers. Carson, you've had a ton of these. Not going to give it all away, but who are some of the guys that you've profiled so far? And then what are some of the guys coming in the next couple of days for Oklahoma fans to dig in and read more about?
Yeah, so the two that I have published, or at least one of them will publish in 7 minutes. But Javonnie Gibson, transfer receiver from Arkansas Pine Bluff. And you hear Arkansas Pine Bluff, team that struggled at the FCS level. Sooners probably not thinking anything of that. Everything I have heard about this guy from reporters, people on staff at UAPB, they're saying this guy could be a star in Norman. This guy has speed, it stands out. He isn't the biggest receiver, but great playability. Actually three, shoot, sorry. Isaiah Sategna, Arkansas, also did that one. That's another good piece. He was the Razorbacks' number three receiver this year. Wasn't amazing, but 491 yards for a pretty good offense this year, led by Talen Green. Definitely a good catch ability. Not a whole lot of size either, but a speedy dude. A lot of deep field targets, which something that the Sooners really didn't see this year. And you mentioned Luke Elzinga a minute ago, Jacob Ulrich from Kennesaw State. That team was not good this year. This was their first year in the FBS. They went 2-10, lost to UT Martin. They had some bad games. But Jacob Ulrich, from everything that I've heard, he was the star, 13th best punt average in the country, something like 30 punts within the 20-yard line. So he was kind of the bright spot for their team, replaces a very good punter in Elzinga. So there's a lot of different people that I'm excited to tell their stories next. Marvin Jones, I know that one's coming up. Some of the guys from Western Carolina. So yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff for both me and Hoove. So I'm excited to share some of these.
Yeah, Hoove kicked that series off with John Mateer a couple of days ago. That one, if you missed it, just find the most recent one. Go to OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com, hit the football tab, pull up the most recent one, read that one. You'll love that one too. But all of the previous ones are linked in there as well if you missed any of those, Hoove.
I got some really good insight today from I'll just say from the person I interviewed from a source, and his name will be in the these are media people that we interview radio guys, play by play beat writers, all that stuff. So talk to somebody today on Kendall Daniels. Got some amazing insight on Kendall Daniels, so that's coming up as well on that series, Transfer Talk. It's the same thing. It's the same series we've done, I think, Ryan, each of the last 2 years, where
I
we
think.
talk to some media people about these guys before we actually talk to the guys themselves in February or March or whenever they're made available. Fingers crossed here in Norman.
Yeah, I think this is year three, all that stuff of transfer talk. But anyway, the gist of it is we can go back and we can watch everything that they've done, all that stuff. But we're talking to the folks that cover them day in, day out, lived them, knows their progression, all that stuff, and kind of what led them to this point and what they could bring to Oklahoma. So Oklahoma Sooners on SI.com, pop, it'll be all up there. Just hit the football tab. You can scroll all that fun stuff. And it's there. One of the many series we're running right now. We got the softball series that I am over halfway through, I think. I don't know. I've been writing softball stories like a madman. We'll get to that when we get to it. But there are a bunch of those up there too. So Fresh Faces, that's the softball series. Transfer Talk, that's the football series. Read them both. It's a lot of good stuff right now on the site. We have full coverage of something else that's happening right now that you should also read to find out why it's happening, and that is men's basketball. We reached that point. A big week for Oklahoma as they came off their bye week, like we talked about. Success up in Fayetteville, Oklahoma ekes that out. Really, really good defensive run, especially in the last, what was it, 2:37 of the game that Arkansas didn't hit a field goal. But then they turn around and last night fall to Texas A&M in College Station. This was a contest that I don't think anyone expected Oklahoma to go in and steal that thing. You were kind of doing the if this happens plus this happens, maybe you're in it late and all that. Carson, they did everything to a certain extent They fouled the hell out of A&M. They got dominated on the boards. And still, with 4 minutes left, you look up and it was a 2-point game. Unfortunately, they just weren't able to get that thing done last night.
Yeah, Ryan, the problem is not losing on the road to Texas A&M. That's a team that is 13 in the AP poll, top 15 in the net. That is a good team. Like you said, I don't think many people saw the Sooners going into College Station and winning it. It's how they didn't win it that's probably a little bit alarming. I mean, the rebound disparity, I don't remember. I think it was 47 to 19 off the top of my head. Just a preposterous difference between the Aggies' rebounds, the Sooners' rebounds, and that ultimately cost them the game, even with how well the Sooners shot compared to A&M, how many more threes they made than A&M. I mean, OU largely outplayed the Sooners throughout the game, but the rebounding was just so stark, such a stark difference that they got so many second chance opportunities, and the Aggies took advantage of those. And thus, OU's 2-5 in conference now. Obviously, like you said, that Arkansas win is gigantic. Arkansas, not an amazing team this year, but winning that game on the road that goes down as a quad one win, that was much needed for the Sooners' resume. Obviously, beat South Carolina, kind of the bottom feeder of the league before that. So, I mean, it's not alarming. Like I said, it's not alarming that they lost to A&M. The rebounding's a problem, though, and there just needs to be some sort of very quick fix because that's going to hurt them rest of the year in conference play and if they make it to March.
Yeah, I think you coined it perfectly. Like on the South Carolina front and on the Arkansas front, it wasn't you needed that win for what it does to your resume. It's what it doesn't subtract from your resume if
Right.
you lose that thing. When you look back last night, though, you just sit there and go, A&M with 21 offensive rebounds, Oklahoma with 19 total rebounds, Forsyth, who is your absolute tough guy, Energizer Bunny, battling through the shiner that he had from that Arkansas game and foul trouble. He leads you in rebounding, Carson. It's one of those things where I know that Mo is in foul trouble and you love the minutes you get. Sam Godwin's not been super effective, but if they're going to play small ball like that, Jalen Moore's got to find a way to pair what he's doing offensively with more than just, what was it, two rebounds that he finished with last night?
Yeah, that's definitely a big concern. Everyone needs to be involved. The guards need to get rebounds. Jalen Moore, as good as he has been, I highlighted this last night in my article. He was outstanding offensively, like he's been this entire season. I think it's 15 games in a row in double figures. As good as Jeremiah Fears is, and as much NBA potential as he has, Moore is the leader of this team, and he's their most consistent player right now. But I'm with you. He is a big enough guy. He is someone that has that hustle. He has that leadership. It is a little bit puzzling that he isn't collecting more rebounds every game. Dayton Forsyth, though, credit to him because he definitely has played a bigger role. I mean, we see him in availabilities all the time. Not a huge guy, not the guy that you'd be expecting to be leading the Sooners, in rebounding, but he's done great. You just kind of want to see some of those contributions from Fears, Kobe Elvis, Duke Miles, more like you said. Just more guys getting involved. Sam Godwin conference season hasn't been too nice to him yet either, but he's a big body. We know what he can do. I mean, you look at that Oklahoma State game, he was phenomenal. He's a very talented player, as are all of the players that get significant minutes for the Sooners. It just kind of has to just work out on the glass because it's not going to get any easier. Every team in the league can rebound.
Yeah, it's been it's almost frustrating me. Like last night, Goodine is excellent again against A&M, not quite the 34, but you get to 10 three-pointers. You only turn the ball over 11 times. If I told you all those things, Carson, I think you'd say, shoot, they might have a chance to steal this thing. But Jeremiah Fears puts in his worst performance in Oklahoma uniform, 0 of 5 from the floor, gets into some foul trouble, has a pair of turnovers, no points. It's a tough spot. On one hand, we've seen what Jeremiah Fears can do against Arizona, do against Michigan, which is why the bar is so high. On the other hand, the freshman, reclassified freshman, going through the dredges of SEC play, Carson, and Duke Miles has stunk. I know you weren't here for this, but he has done exactly what Grant Sherfield and Javon McCollum have done before him, which is be excellent in the non-conference and then dribble down to the baseline and get trapped over and over again. Kobe Elvis doesn't seem to have adjusted very well to coming off the bench here. The veteran backcourt is not giving the young gun any help, but the young gun is not thriving right now.
No, he's not. And that's a you also have to look at it. I mean, the guy should be a senior in high school. So I do think some of those expectations that everybody got from the non-conference play may be a little bit unrealistic, but at the same time, yeah, he looks like a mess on the court, a lot of turnovers. He's not shooting as efficiently as he has been. I would assume his draft stock is falling a little bit, maybe not a lottery pick anymore, which maybe that means he stays in Norman another year. Maybe he plays one more year at OU, which would be huge for this team because this guy is going to be good. We have seen everything that this guy can do. He's a good defender. He's a great offensive player, just needs to cut down the turnovers a little bit. So it's just a learning thing. I think he needs to kind of be taken under the wing of guys like Duke Miles, even though he has struggled in conference play. Jalen Moore, not the same position, but someone that has now played, I think this is his fifth year of college basketball. Sam Godwin, same thing. So there are so many guys I feel like that can lead Jeremiah. And when Jeremiah is playing his best basketball, one of the best players in the nation.
Years of
Oof.
return might depend on who coaches out Oklahoma next year, too.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking today, and this is a sick joke, but was joking. He was supposed to go to Illinois, and they didn't have a spot for him to reclassify in. So he ended up in Oklahoma. He might just go to Illinois anyway on that timeline. Who knows?
He'll be a
When
freshman.
you
He'll be a
look,
freshman next year, right?
yeah.
Sophomore. So yeah, sort of. Freshman in age. Sorry.
Yeah, when you look at it, who before last night, the Sooners were holding on to a 10 seed in bracketology, and I know Porter Moser was going to yell at me for trusting Joe Lunardi because that's what made him so upset on Selection Sunday. Yeah, last year, boo-hoo. They were holding on to it. They were the top of the last four byes, which means that there were seven teams below them and missing the tournament, essentially. But John, when you look at it, this conversation feels very similar to a conversation we were having last year, which is, on paper, right now, most of Oklahoma's resume is done. And unless they can find a way to win a bunch of these games, they're not going to be doing much adding. And you start to look at it, John, that A&M game last night starts a string of five straight games via the current AP Top 25, where the Sooners are taking on ranked opponents Saturday. They'll be back in Norman against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I'm looking at Lenardi's latest. Last night, before last night, I think they were the top of the last four byes. Now they're number two of the last four byes, below Georgia. Texas is another at the top of the line of the last four in. So the SEC, the finish that Oklahoma's got ahead of it, man, they got so much work to do. It's got to start with the mentality that it takes to get tough when you're talking about rebounding. How do you get out rebounded? Offensive rebounds 21 to 2, total rebounds 47 to 19, and then second chance points, y'all. I don't know if I've ever seen this before. Second chance points. Oh, you had two second three check second chance points, 20 to 3. They were outscored second chance points. I get that they're playing small ball. I get that they're trying to create havoc, but at some point when you've got two bigs over there on the bench, or you've got one big over there on the bench, and you're going at them with your one big, you might want to try two. You might want to work in some sets where you've got two big guys on the floor, because literally every rebound for about 7 minutes that was coming off was going to Texas A&M. How are you supposed to compete with that? You're doing everything right. Defensively, you held them to 4 of something shooting, 4 of 20 something shooting. You're blocking. You got six block shots. You're protecting the paint when you can. You've got near 25 to 21 was the free throw disadvantage, so not that much. And it's just one. There's so many people out there that are saying right now, this team doesn't have any heart because they're giving up rebounds, and rebounds are effort plays. Rebounds are a large part of rebounds are effort plays. A large part of rebounds is being smart, knowing where to position yourself, knowing how to box out, knowing how to get a body on you, how to get a guy's arms down, all that stuff. Watch the Thunder play. Okay, don't watch the Thunder play the Dallas Mavericks, okay? Because they can't get a rebound against the Mavs either. But watch the Thunder play anybody else. Watch how they rebound. Watch how they box out. The Thunder are not a particularly gifted rebounding team, but Oklahoma's just bad at it. Whoever's teaching and coaching rebounding at Oklahoma, they need to go back and read the little rebound 101 thing.
Yeah, Forsythe coming in. It's just like that's the proof. Like he comes in, he gets a couple boards. You're just like, okay, so see, he can do it. He's the smallest guy on the floor when he's
Right.
out. It's been frustrating and just another road. They just get out physical every time they go on the road, except for Arkansas. And Arkansas sucks. Sorry to our friends at Arkansas. Happened at the Stag against Georgia. Obviously, was an embarrassment against Alabama, and happened again last night in College Station. So not great there. Get Vanderbilt coming back in. That's the good news. It's Vanderbilt. They are the 24th ranked team in the country. The bad news is they're off their midweek bye. So Vanderbilt has had all week to prepare for you. Feels like another must win at the Lloyd Noble Center. You got to get to 8 wins somehow in SEC play. Good luck counting the wins. I'm doing the math. I'm bad at math, but I can't get to 8 right now. We shall see. On the other side of the Lloyd Noble Center, the women, they bounce back against Georgia on Sunday. A little bit of a lineup change. Rana Scott was in for Nevaeh Tott. That seemed to add a little bit of fluidity as Oklahoma kept the turnovers down, darted out to a quick 8-2 run with Rana Scott there. It was everything you wanted against Georgia. Good vibes, all that stuff. But the big one is circling back tomorrow night. Sooners head to Baton Rouge, take on number 7 LSU. A villain of yesteryear, Kim Mulkey. The Sherry Cole Kim Mulkey battles were iconic. This one's going to look a little bit different. But Jenny Bronchek after the game on Sunday says it's not going to feel different. One thing that she talked about is the quote that stands out is against South Carolina, they experienced elite playing elite. And you saw Kim Mulkey go, ah, 10 McDonald's All-Americans. I've never seen that before. That's what South Carolina was bringing. But something Jenny talked about, guys, is that Oklahoma was not really necessarily prepared for what happened on the floor, plus the 18,000 fans and the environment, the playing style, the coaches, the players. Jenny said all different with LSU, very talented, but the environment's going to be the same. So that's kind of the goal, is preparing to take on that environment here on Thursday night as the Sooners head down to Baton Rouge. Guys, this is already their third top 10 matchup in league play when you go back to the Texas game. And then the reward on the other side of that is Oklahoma's ranked 13th Sunday. Kentucky's going to roll through as a 12th ranked team in the country. So you're getting a little bit of the same vibes on the women's side of things that Jenny Bronchek's half of the LNC.
If Jenny is not wearing a crimson and lime green feather boa, I'm going to be really disappointed when she goes up against Kim Mulkey.
It's the carries on a great tradition of Kim Mulkey doing Kim Mulkey stuff, and Sherry Cole is like, I'm just going to continue to be like my regal self over here, and we're just going to do the full clash of styles, full teams played different, it all looked different, all that stuff. So that'll get going. What, 6 o'clock tomorrow night? I believe yes, 6 p.m. Oklahoma and LSU. That bad boy is going to be on ESPN2, the dose for the Sooners and the Tigers. Full coverage of everything from that. OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. I'll have all that. Carson's going to have all the happenings on Saturday with the Sooners and Vandy. I'll have Sunday stuff with Oklahoma and Kentucky. OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. That's the place to be. Not the only thing that's happening Saturday. We just got this down the pipe. We'll talk to Patty Gasso and friends before that basketball game on Saturday. So while you're settling in to your seat to watch Oklahoma take on Vanderbilt, I'll be pumping out some softball preseason content on Saturday. Be on the lookout for the video. I believe it's Patty Gasso, Nellie McEnroe Marinus, Abby Dayton, and somebody else. The email's not in front of me. Doesn't matter. It'll be up on the website, OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. So we preview that next Thursday. The softball season starts. I am stressed, but it'll be a ton of fun. That should be good. Carson will be helping us out with softball coverage as well as I abandon the staff for a week in the middle of February. I'll miss like 7 games and be gone for 7 days. That's how much this team's going to get going when they get to Love's Field. That's not the only softball content though. Head to OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com right now. Click the softball tab. Scroll, baby, scroll. I've got profiles of all 8 freshmen that were originally in this class already up and firing. OklahomaSoonersOnSI.com. I've worked through the transfers. We've done the two pitchers, Isabella Smith and Sam Landry. We'll get through the rest of the OU transfers, and then we'll put a bow on it with the newest addition to the Sooners, Sophia Bordy, who reclassified. Her story will be up on Sunday. That'll lead us into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know it. You love it. We got position previews, all that fun stuff, all the way up to the softball season starting on Thursday. Softball on SI, back up, back running, back firing on all cylinders, even if my brain is not. So head over to the website there as we get ready for what should be a fun year, guys. I enjoy it. Carson, I know you've never seen me do the softball stuff up close. But I just like go MIA for like weeks at a time, where it's just like, hey, there's some football. You guys do that. I'm buried over here under a mountain of a yellow ball.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. This program, I covered the ASU softball team when I was in college. They made the WCWS, so I covered that. They got eliminated actually from OU. That was kind of the start of when everything started going right for the Sooners. So I've seen them. I've seen Patty Gasso. I've seen the athletes that she gets, and it's pretty amazing. So I'm excited to see what you produce, what me and Hoove contribute along the way with, obviously filling in those games when you're overseas. So that will be fun. Spring's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, gymnastics looks really good. Baseball has high hopes. Spring football, a lot of stuff. So it's a fun time to be a beat reporter covering the Sooners.
Yeah, 14 new faces on the softball front. So there's plenty of new. If you want to kind of get an idea, who are these people? Why did they end up in Oklahoma? OklahomaSoonersOnSide.com. That's the whole point of that. Like you mentioned here, we're about a week or two out from really firing up the baseball machine. That rotation looks hashtag fun. A ton of new coming to Norman. They also got the stadium enhancements move that they announced as far as some of the party decks out there. I know that you and I covered regional action. It's going to feel a lot closer to regional play, which was an outstanding scene out at the Dale for Oklahoma when they were bringing in what UConn and all that fun stuff this past summer.
So I'm a guy that covered just college baseball in the spring from 1999 to 2000 and about 2010. My spring beat was college baseball, and I covered a lot of OU games at L. Dale Mitchell. Never seen an atmosphere like what we saw last year in the postseason. So OU smartly, wisely taking that atmosphere and saying, guys, we can do this on a regular basis. Here's what we need to do. So their fan experiences and amenities and opportunities for interaction. So very smart, very wise of Joe Castiglione and his staff, Greg Tipton and those guys as well, to kind of seize that momentum that was created in the in because I've covered super regionals at OU back in the day, back in the Galloway and the Koschel days, right? And they never had crowds like that. So very impressive stuff last year, and very smart for OU to build on it as soon as possible.
Especially late into the night too. There were a couple of those late nights at Eldell that Monday night that we were just like, what's this going to be like? It was electric. And it feels like this is a nice little bridge that still working on the stadium project, the fundraising, all that stuff. They'll get the renovations, they'll get there, but feels like this is a nice in between as they continue to fundraise there. Elsewhere, just kind of clearing off one more two housekeeping notes, like Carson mentioned. Women's gym off and running. They beat number 14 Alabama in Tuscaloosa. KJ Kindler had some funny quotes about yeah, the Alabama fans. There's not like the clap, hey, you stuck it. It's the we're gonna talk some ass in your general direction and see how you handle it. And they handled it A-OK. Friday night, it'll be the Arkansas Razorbacks in the Lloyd Noble Center for Oklahoma Women's Gym. That should be pretty fun. And
Can you
shout
imagine?
out.
Can you imagine going to a women's gymnastics meet and standing when they're like on the balance beam? You're standing over them, going, "You suck! You suck! You're gonna fall!"
Well, this is a
What? It doesn't. It just means more. What?
similar but different. So one of my really good friends in high school, his brother played tennis at OU, and he would always talk about, you know, college tennis is different than pro tennis. You could be loud during the
Oh
points
yeah.
and stuff because there's six matches going on. And he was talking about, man, and Norman, a Texas player, they rip a really nice just baseline inside out winner, and the OU fans kind of like, okay, whatever. They like you go to Austin and you have like a massive overhead, and people just will boo you, even if he's like, stop cheering the other team's points. I guess that's what Alabama brought that energy to the gymnastics meet. Did not go well, but I guess credit for trying. So Friday night, Oklahoma will host number 13 Arkansas at the LNC on the women's gym front. Shout out to women's tennis squad. They beat number 14 Cal to qualify for the ITA indoors, which is the unofficial official kickoff. Oklahoma, the men, they made it to the finals and then fell. So they're not headed to the ITA indoors, but that's a top 10 team that looks really, really good there as well. Firing off the spring sports, and then we're just waiting on men's and women's golf to get rolling. Basically, it's baseball, golf, and then we'll be fully in it. Gentlemen, I think that's everything. Have we covered all? Have I missed anything?
Did men's gymnastics get to number one this week?
I did not see.
No, nope, I'm looking at the press release from women. My bad.
I know that they were able to beat Stanford. What was that 2 weekends ago, maybe? But it looks like as of now, they're sitting at number one, Illinois two, Stanford three.
Okay, so I was right. They did get to number one.
For men's gym. So yeah, that comes via Road to Nationals, their standings there. So
There you go.
we are fully in it right now in the spring. And then, like we said, here in a couple of weeks, once spring practice a little over a month gets rolling, everything all at once, per huge down in Norman. It's a lot to cover. I get it. That's why you can do just a couple of things. First off, just go to OklahomaSoonersOnASide.com, bookmark that bad boy. You never have to remember it. And we never ask you for anything. Come to the site. It's all free. It's all there. You don't have to do anything other than click on what you want to read and scroll. And our excellent coverage will be there for you every single day. But if you're not one of the, I go to the same website every day, stuff happens. What's just the one-stop shop? Just follow us on Twitter, on X, at Sooners on SI. That's where everything that we produce comes out, obviously. Or you can follow us individually at John E. Hoover, at underscore Ryan Chapman, and at Carson D Field. That'll do it for this week. We'll talk to you guys next Wednesday, where we assume we'll be breaking down a new defensive coordinator hire. It'll be runoff from on the women's side of things, OU LSU, OU Kentucky, on the men's side of things, OU Vandy. And does the Tennessee midweek sneak in there before we, is that a Tuesday night game? Or we'll preview it on Wednesday. Either way, that'll be coming up. Or is it Auburn? I've got it all mixed up.
It's Tennessee.
Okay. So we'll get that rolling as we preview everything at the Lloyd Noble Center and all that next Wednesday. But until then, for Carson, for Hoop, I'm Brian Chapman. Thanks for coming along, and we will talk to you guys on the Sooners on SI Pod next week.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.